We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all. I'm talking about Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, by the way, speaking of covering a lot of ground, I'm pretty excited. We just issued another press release today. Y'all are aware that just about, 6 weeks ago, we launched a new video podcast. This one's called The Right Philosophy. Our second video podcast starts this week. It's called Right Click. Looking forward to this. So some of y'all remember Birdman, who used to be on the show. Birdman is young, sharp, and very skilled. He's actually really into gaming. He was a competitive gamer at one point. He's a techie. And so his new podcast starts this week. It's going to be a video podcast. It's called Right Click, and it's going to be available on the Right Side website starting Friday. So we issued a press release today to announce that. And we also decided, you know what, we got to start promoting the fact that Right Side Radio is just one piece of what we do. So the website from now on is rightsidemedia.org. Rightsidemedia.org. Right Side Media is the actual name of the company. Right Side Radio is one part of what Right Side Media does. So we now have a written op-ed that goes out every week, published in like 18 different outlets. We have the radio show, of course, that y'all know quite well, and goes 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. We then podcast the show. We now have Video Podcast 1 and Video Podcast 2. So The Right Philosophy and Right Click are both up there. And we have two others that are in the development phase right now. We hope to have a repertoire of upwards of 4 to 5 separate video lines of video podcasts for y'all to choose from. Right Side Media, man, we're just intent upon giving somebody in whatever version of our audience is out there something to dig into and enjoy, and also just gain from as conservatives in today's world. So anyway, we're pretty stoked. Rightsidemedia.org. That's the new website. Check it out. And Right Click starts this Friday. By the way, the latest Right Philosophy podcast will be uploaded by this afternoon. Production just finished on it. So looking forward to it. And thank you all for helping make that successful. All right. Number one, triple dipper. School days. Listen, I would say this. One of the best things that could happen right now, as far as education goes in America, is the ability for parents to be creative. And I don't mean like freelancing and making up things that don't make sense. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about parents having a say, having a choice, having some measure of being able to bring things to bear. And oh, by the way, it'd be really nice if their elected officials would join them on this. I mean, parents have a right, they should have a right to the determination as to what is best for their child. Now, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Here's the deal. If you believe, well, let me ask that. There's two questions. How you answer these two questions determines whether you're a school choice advocate or not. Number one, who do you believe is the most important to make decisions about the well-being of a child? Is it the school system, or is it the parent or legal guardian? If you believe it's the school system that has the better say about education, then you're not for school choice. If you believe the parents have a better say, then you believe they have a right to make the choice. Here's the next question. Do you believe the tax dollars that we all pay, sales taxes, payroll taxes, all of it, do you believe the taxes that we already all pay should go for the education of the child or go to support the system? If you believe that they are there for the education of a child, then you believe in choice. If you believe that they are just there to support the system, then you're not for school choice. It's as easy as that. Two questions. Who makes the better decision? What do you think about the money? That's it. Everything else follows from those two questions. Now, here's the thing. Across America right now, we've seen a movement. I've got my first article here in the stack. This one comes from Fox, and it came out last month, June 21st. There's a group called EdChoice. They're one of the national advocates for school choice. They did a study, and they keep two data points going on their study. They renew it every year. Here's what the most recent study said. The study focuses on where do parents want to send their child to school and where do they actually send them to school. All right? Here's the deal. Where people want to go to school, 39% say they want to send their kids to a traditional public school. Okay. 36% say they want to send their kids to a private school. Okay. 9% would choose a charter and 9% would choose to do homeschooling. All right. So it's a pretty fair breakdown. As to what people want, it's 39% public schools, 36% private schools, 9% charters, and 9% education at home. No problem. What they get in reality is very different. You just heard me say what people want, but what they get is that only 20% of those who polled, despite what they said they want, only 20% send their child to a private or charter school or educate them at home. Only 20% do anything other than traditional public schools. So the gap between parent preferences and actual enrollment, totally out of whack. Totally. That's a shame. Well, Phil, we got to support the teachers' union says if we don't watch out, they'll do away with public education. Bull crap. There'll always be public education. First of all, not everybody's going to want to go to a private school. Secondly, not everybody's going to take advantage or have an option for a private school. And thirdly, not everybody's going to want a homeschool. Public schools will always be an option. Public schools also need to do a better job. Public schools have no competition in most places. In the absence of competition, there's no reason to have to excel. In the absence of competition, if you're the only thing in town, guess what? You can get away with whatever you want to. The kids aren't reading on grade level. Yeah, sucks. Sorry about that. But we're the public school. We do what we can with what we got. Do better. How about that? I mean, here's my example. I'm going to say it again. Free market principles can apply to everything. They can apply to education. The free market says, if you move to a small town, and that small town has a town council that decided that we're only going to allow one grocery store. We're going to pass an ordinance that says only one grocery store, and we're going to pick which one it is. And so we pick that one. And so, ABC store is the only place you can buy groceries in town. How long do you think the ABC store is going to wind up having good produce? How many often do you think they're going to run specials and have sales and, discounts? How often do you think they're going to have good, courteous service and try to draw you in with a sense that you're welcomed by being there? I would dare say if they're mandated to be the only one in town, you're going to get what you get. You're going to pay what you have to pay, and that's just the way it's going to be. But as soon as the town council wakes up and says, boy, we need to do it better. How about this? We're going to say anybody who wants to set up a grocery store here, come on. Guess what? That's called the free market. Next thing you know, Publix competes with Winn-Dixie and competes with Piggly Wiggly and competes with Aldi and competes with Bruno's and competes with Kroger and next thing you know, the people benefit because guess what? Everybody wants to up their game and try to get the most customers, and the only way they can do that is to improve the product. The same is true with schools. If all you do is allow kids to go to the one option that they have available because of their zip code, then guess what? There's no reason to have to excel. There's no reason to do a better job. You can just be flatlining every single day, still sucking down that paycheck and drawing in those government tax dollars. So right now what we're seeing is, since the pandemic, the call for school choice has exploded, partly because parents woke up and saw things in the online versions that they never saw before. Also partly because parents began to question more and get more involved. If there's anything good that came out of the pandemic, education may be one of the highlights. So states like West Virginia, Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Indiana, and a lot of others expanded school choice options. 75 school choice programs across 33 states, plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, 22 million students, or nearly 40%, now have access to a private choice program, private school choice program, if they so desire. That's good. But let me ask you this, is that enough? What can the public schools do? What can they do to improve their game? Because they're not going away, and we don't want them to go away. We want them to be there. Because for those who don't have the otherwise option, shouldn't they at the very least be allowed to have a good product? Well, in some places, they're taking some creative steps that I didn't see coming. And I like it. And I'd love to get y'all's thoughts on this. But like in Arkansas, Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she just rolled out a proposal this week. Story here on Daily Wire came out yesterday. Banning cell phones in schools. I'm going to be honest with you, I'm for it. How many of y'all have gone to Walmart and watched people get out of their car, pull their phone out of their pocket, put their head down in their phone, and walk through a parking lot full of moving vehicles staring at their phone? That's exactly what kids are doing in school. Some of them cheat on tests. Some of them send pictures of each other they shouldn't send. Others get locked into social media. They don't socialize. They don't interact. They don't excel. They don't go to gym. They're just stuck in their phones. How about this? Arkansas school districts are now being invited to take part in a pilot program because Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Governor Sanders, says screen addiction and social media are contributing to youth mental illness like nothing else in the nation. So they made it a priority, she says. They're committing state resources to help with the crisis. Two key priorities are restricting in-school phone use and providing mental health care. And they're inviting districts to take part. She also points out that studies are showing that some kids, a lot of kids, maybe the average kid, they say, in America is spending 5 hours a day on social media. 5 hours a day. Well, I got more on that. When we get back from the break, I'll tell you about it. But the ban on cell phones. Text me your thoughts. I want to hear it. I got an article that talks about how many states are already doing that. I'm looking to see whether Alabama is going to join in. I think it's a worthy project. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, talking about school days. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just
making common sense like a superpower. TL from Huntsville, Texas, in says, are you affiliated with the Right Side Broadcasting Network on Rumble? Not yet. I say that tongue-in-cheek. But no, we're aware of each other. They're actually based out of Alabama, too. It just happens to be that they have a different version of the name. Right Side for them is two words. It's just one word for me. But anyway, no, sir, TL, we are separate but yet aligned. Laura from Decatur said, this is why my sixth grader is not having a phone till he graduates high school and he can pay for it himself. And Thomas from Athens says, Colonel Williams, thank you and Big Rig for your service, and many thanks to your many ancestors and son having likewise served our country. I remember all of y'all on this 248th anniversary of our nation's birth. Why? Because I believe it's due to their deep love for this country. Therefore, I believe, if you get a chance, please read or listen to the very long but moving speech about the founding of our country and the aftermath suffered by the signers thereof. Rush Limbaugh's father gave this speech decades ago, and Rush read it on his radio show every July 4th. It was finally printed in his Limbaugh letter and now in the archives. Thanks, man. I appreciate that very much. I will check that out, Thomas. So back to the question of school days. How do we enhance education? I think one of the ways we have to do that is by expanding choice. We expand the opportunities for parents to have a greater say in what their kids receive in the way of an education. Barring that, what can we do to improve schools? And what are some of the creative things that are happening around the nation right now? One of which I just told you, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, governor of Arkansas, is just asking schools to begin taking part in a pilot program that they will help fund to do away with cell phone usage during school hours and also providing mental health capabilities. And I think that's great. But she's not alone. Story here from March of this year from stateline.org. It starts off by pointing out that Hickman High School in Columbia, Missouri, they have trouble enforcing a rule with kids not bringing their phones. The teacher who's being interviewed here, a science teacher, says Mrs. Gilzo, says it's like almost compulsive for kids to need to be on their phone all the time. She said, I can't compete with Netflix. Okay. How about this? 3/4 of K-12 public schools try to prohibit non-academic cell phone usage, but only about 43% of them actually have a solid rule. But at many of them, like at Hickman High, the bans are weekly enforced, if at all. In other words, don't let me see it. Just don't let me see it. So they sneak it. They text each other behind somebody's back. The teacher's not looking. They're looking on their phones. And next thing you know, they're out there on the breaks. They're not talking to each other. They're staring at Facebook. They're texting the person who sits next to them at the cafeteria table. Last year, Florida became the first state to require all public schools to bar students from their phones during classes. Now, half a dozen other states are pushing their schools to follow suit. Indiana just signed into law a bill that requires school districts to prohibit cell phones during instructional times. Similar bills in Oklahoma, Kansas, and Vermont are underway. Connecticut, introducing legislation this year. Utah, urging schools to make the decision on their own. It's interesting, this is the way it's going to be. I mean, Oregon like leaves it up to school districts individually. But there was a 2019 survey done of college students in 37 states, plus parts of Canada. And that survey clearly indicated that digital devices are considered a distraction. On average, respondents say they spent 19% of their class time using digital devices for non-class purposes. If you've already got problems with the school systems, if you've already got problems with the education quality, but you're having kids sitting there spending upwards close to 20% of their time on non-education-related cell phone usage during class, guess what? Maybe one of the first creative things you can do is get everybody back to a point that that's not even an option. Ban the use. I don't think this is a big deal. I think it's hard to ask. You know what's interesting, though, as you read the article? One of the biggest resistors of this is the parents. I have to know. I have to know where they are. I have to know if they're okay. I have to know if I can contact them. Back in the day, I mean, Big Rig, you and I are two different generations. You're in your 30s. I'm in my 50s. But pretty sure that even in your generation and mine, if parents wanted to call the school, they could. Students were like counted in for attendance in their homeroom class. And next thing you know, everybody knew whether you were in school or not. And if the mom needed you, she can call the school.
Yeah. And when I was in school, we had the little cell phones, but they were like the...
Like the flip phone kind?
Or the Nokias.
Oh, yeah.
With the snake on it. And they were only good for texting. And if you had those, they would take it from you.
Until the BlackBerry came out. And then it was all cool.
Well, I was out of school whenever the BlackBerry came out.
Okay. Well, still, I mean, out of our history, 230 years-ish, cell phones weren't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the last 10-ish, maybe 15. And I'm looking at it thinking, get rid of them and get back to focusing in on the topic at hand, which is education.
Agreed.
All right. Listen, coming up next, we're going to have an interview. Stephanie Smith, president of API, is going to contact us here, and we're going to talk through some things that are happening with API about what they're calling for and assisting with regards to the brand new CHOOSE Act, Alabama's school choice. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on this hump day, the day before Independence Day. And I'm glad to go to the phones right now. We're in Dipper number one, talking about school days, and I'm going to bring on somebody who's a frequent flyer on the show. Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute, is on the line. Stephanie Smith, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And by the way, before we go any further, I got to brag on you and congratulate you. Under your leadership, the State Policy Network has now, you've been nominated for a national award. Am I correct?
That is correct. We were pretty pleased. It's called the Bob Williams Award, and you're familiar with it from your days at API, I'm sure. But it's the State Policy Network selects policy wins, basically, in a couple of different categories. And we were nominated for Best Home State Win. So we're in the top three in the nation for our work on school choice.
Outstanding. Well, it's nice segue into our topic today.
absolutely.
You guys have been advocates, and API has long been an advocate for school choice. And you guys did an amazing amount of work, yeoman's work, this Choose Act that we have in Alabama. And I think we might want to go ahead and remind the audience the details of the Choose Act. But then what I'm also really impressed with is you guys have launched a new website for public awareness on it. So hit us up. What you got?
Yeah, so the Choose Act was passed in March, and it was a really big deal. It's one of those things that because it passed a little quicker and a little, quote, easier than a lot of people thought, there wasn't as much public attention to it as you know, kind of a knockdown, drag-out fight, end of the session kind of thing. But, you know, Kay Ivey, to her credit, said that it was a top priority for her office. Will Ainsworth has been an advocate for several years for expanding school choice, and then the leadership of both houses got behind it, and we were able to pass that in March, and Kay Ivey signed it in March. So almost immediately, the Department of Revenue, which is the administrator of the program, started work on how to implement it. And so they're still in those processes. API has been in pretty constant communication with them through the implementation process. They're doing a great job. It's just one of those things that we're kind of in this no man's land on information because they're still developing how it's actually going to work, the logistics of how it's going to work for parents and things like that. So we decided, since we were such a part of the, you know, of passing the bill and drafting the bill and negotiations with it, we decided that we also wanted to be in charge, you know, we also want to be involved in the implementation of it and getting information out to the general public. So we started a new website called Education Freedom Alabama, and it's, so it's educationfreedomal.com, and it is going to be pushing out, it is now, and is going to be pushing out information to parents and schools and headmasters and homeschoolers and microschoolers about how the program is going to work as it develops and then how to access information from all of those vantage points about school choice in the state of Alabama.
No, that's cool. It's so needed because it's almost like because it passed so easily this year, despite the fact that, you know, we've been talking about it for years, but this comprehensive bill, this comprehensive bill sort of came together and is really because a lot of the work was done by folks like y'all behind the scenes, and then it just launched into the legislative process. I think that it didn't get the headlines it could have gotten, like the gambling bills did or whatever else. I think your website and awareness campaigns like this are going to be so necessary to make sure people know they have options.
Yeah, absolutely. So we put together the website. It's going to have information. It has information right now about eligibility, kind of who's eligible when, what years, you know, how it's actually going to work remains to be seen. But it has, so far, has information about what types of kids are eligible. So I'll walk through that real quickly.
Yeah.
In year 2020, this is starting 2025. So in year 2025, the first 500 spots go to students with special needs. And then next on the list will be active duty service member children. And then next on the list will be students from families of four with income about 300% of the poverty level, which it varies year to year. So this is not an exact figure, but for this year, it's about $90,000. So those are the three types of students that will be eligible in the first year. That same exact eligibility will be in place for the second year. And then in the third year, the first 500 slots go again to special needs, but then after that, students that are already in the program are prioritized, but it becomes open up to every single student in the state of Alabama. So we're trying to make sure that we get the word out for our people who have special needs kids, for active duty service member kids, and for people in that income demographic first, but then in that third year, it will be available, the process will be available for all students in the state of Alabama. And so we're trying to make sure that parents know that they have new options so that they can plan ahead for their kids for the next 3 to 5 to 7 years. So the question that we get the most often is, A, how is it going to work, which we can't really answer yet, and then B, what kind of money are we talking about? Yeah. And so that's an important aspect, too, which is it's up to $7,000. It's a $7,000 price tag per student enrolled in a participating school, and then $2,000 per student for those who are homeschooling.
Yeah.
There's a cap for homeschoolers at $4,000 per family, and that's not meant as a punishment. It's just because they're not brick and mortar schools, and so it's cheaper to administer. It's, you know, it's cheaper to homeschool a child because you're buying curriculum and you're buying supplies and even digital supplies, but for one student that's just not as expensive as a classroom.
So let me ask you this before we run out of time. I mean, this is a fairly comprehensive program, maybe one of the more comprehensive school choice options in the nation now.
It is.
And we've seen great things in places where something similar has been implemented. I'm wondering, though, has at the Alabama Policy Institute, have y'all been receiving calls from out of state with others saying, hey, how'd you do what you did? What's Alabama looking like? How do we get model legislation? Is anybody calling you and asking from other locations how they
absolutely
can maybe move that way? Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Alabama was the 11th state to pass universal school choice legislation. So we're actually, we're not first. So we have some that we can look around and see the success stories and model ourselves after them. But yes, now we are getting lots of calls, especially because our program is a little bit different than anybody else's in the nation. The model really is Florida because they have had school choice for almost 20 years, and they've been a huge success story. And so we modeled a lot of what we did and created in the state of Alabama after Florida, and then also after Arkansas and Arizona. And so we had the benefit of seeing what has worked and what hasn't worked in other states, and we're modeling our program that direction, which is exactly what API is for, is to figure out what works in other states and bring the good ideas to Alabama, adapt them, Alabamify them, and then try to put them into place. And so that's what we're trying to do with school choice.
I think it's huge. I think it's awesome. I'm excited to see the results. I mean, I look forward to seeing Alabama's numbers come up in general. But I love the fact that parents are going to have a say in that. And I think that's huge. And let me ask you this, too, with about a minute and a half or 2 minutes left. So the teachers union hates this, hates it with a passion. Has there been any threat of litigation to try and enjoin the act being implemented?
I have not heard or been privy to any threat of that at all.
Oh, nice.
Which has been surprising.
Let me gather myself.
I know. In almost every other state, that has been the case. Now, I will say that, AEA went back and forth during the legislative process, from being opposed to being neutral to back to being opposed. I think the real fight, another fight that we'll have with this is on the funding side in year three. But we set it up as a tax credit program, kind of a hybrid program, and I think that that will help us get it funded. And then also having all of those lawmakers really be for it. There wasn't a whole lot of opposition to it. I think we'll push it forward. And part of pushing it forward and it really being a successful program is getting the word out and allowing people to be able to use it. And so that's why we're trying to do what we're doing.
So speaking of which, let's end with saying the website again, if people want to check it out in more detail, is what?
Sure. It's educationfreedomalabama.com, but it's just AL. So educationfreedomal.com. There's information on there, and there's an opportunity to put your email address in there, and we'll send you email updates as things change to your inbox.
Oh, nice. Okay, great. Well, listen, before you go, too, I happen to notice you guys have got a big dinner coming up this fall, and you've already secured your keynote speaker, Dr. Ben Carson. Am I right?
That is right.
That's
it's going
awesome.
To be September 26th at V Club, and Dr. Ben Carson will be in town for a roundtable, a reception, and also as our keynote speaker.
Awesome. All right. We'll touch base with you about that as we get closer to it. But in the meantime, Stephanie Smith, thanks so much. Have a great 4th.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Phil.
See you. I love seeing API doing what they're doing. I think that Stephanie has truly taken them back to a place that they are impacting public policy in a great conservative way. And I love the fact that they're getting nominated now for a national award. We won a national award while I was there in 2020. And she's taking it to new levels. All right, let's take a break right now. We'll come right back. I'll get a few text messages and put a lid on this one. And then we'll jump into number two of the Triple Dipper. Don't hurt their pride. It's a big deal, y'all. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Yeah, I mean, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, so school days. Let's finish this up, and I'll let you guys know there's a couple other things that have happened just in Alabama alone just this year. So two bills were passed, and these relate to the schools themselves. Number one, we have the School Security Act. There's now a mandate that periodic inspections of all public schools have to be done, and they get a grade based upon their level of security. And this is done to make sure that we're providing not just a quality education, but a safe environment for the kids. So that's that one. Now, I think it's only for public schools, and that there's grant money that could be available in subsequent budgets to even help if there needs to be like a security door or an alarm system or, you know, something to enhance the fire protection. The other one, though, is student discipline. Interesting. So Senate Bill 157 passed this past year, and they actually call it the Teacher's Bill of Rights. And it came from hearing from educators over the past several years that are frustrated, sometimes demoralized, even angered because they lack control or the ability to even exert control in their classrooms. And so, effective June 1st of this year, like just last month, the new bill goes into effect that says that under the law, if a teacher dismisses a student to the principal before being allowed to come back to the classroom, the principal has to provide a written certification to the teacher that the issue has been dealt with and disciplinary action has been brought to bear. That's brand spanking new. It also includes a series of disciplinary actions for repeated incidents, up to suspension, mandated transfers to alternative schools, that kind of thing. So basically what it did is almost like protection for the teacher and sort of like sentencing guidelines, if you will. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, if a kid's being unruly, disrupting the whole class, everybody suffers if something's not done to deal with it. So I'm glad to see the legislature tackling those things. Then there's some stuff happening nationwide. Interesting dynamics. Did you know that Louisiana is now the first state to mandate the display of the Ten Commandments back in public schools? It's a mandate. It's probably going to withstand constitutional scrutiny. Why? Because they are doing it as a historical document. It's part of the foundation for Western law. It's one of many. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and whether or not it's going to be enjoined. Because the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and all the usual bad actors are saying, we can't let that happen because that's dangerous. You know, go ahead and let a kid, identify differently and not share with their parents that their pronouns are different and they're trying to be, a sex they weren't born as. But it's, it's okay. Just don't show them the Ten Commandments. But that's just displaying it. Then there's Oklahoma. Brand new story came out last Friday. Oklahoma's top education official is outraging civil rights groups, according to the AP, because Republican State Superintendent Ryan Walters issued a memo that says that school leaders across the state need to recognize the Bible is the cornerstone of Western civilization and that it must be used in classrooms in a mandatory fashion. That's interesting. Putting the Bible back in schools, but making it mandatory. I'm not sure he's going to be able to pass this one. I could see the fight coming. I understand why the fight would come. I like the Bible being in classrooms. I could see it. Can they require it? So Superintendent Walters said that Oklahoma state law and academic standards are crystal clear. It can be used to instruct students in public schools. Indeed, he said, as a social studies standard, biblical stories, religious scriptures can be primary instructional resources. What's not clear, it says, is whether or not he can mandate the use of the Bible itself. Okay, we'll see. Me personally, I think if we had the prayer back in schools, the Bible back in schools, the Ten Commandments on the walls, I'm pretty sure we have fewer problems. Just saying. Speaking of problems, let's come back to the after the break here in a minute. And we're going to go to number two on the Triple Dipper. Don't hurt their pride. Has there ever been a whinier, more entitled group of activists than the LGBTQ2IA plus acronym crowd? I'm not saying that every gay person is an activist. I am not. But those that are have no idea of when overreach should stop. And they are willing to prosecute anybody that glares at them. How dare you misgender me? I'll throw you off this plane if you call me a she or a he when I'm really not. It's just on and on and on. Listen, we're going to talk about it. Don't hurt their pride. It's a big deal. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.